We are the Nonprofits. Hi, everybody. I'm the host, Jeff D. Our co-host is Dennis Lube.
Howdy.
Our producer, Russell Glasser, is absent today, but we are ably assisted by our engineer, Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Today's guest is nobody, because this is not that kind of show.
Well, actually, we'd planned on guests.
I know, but
and
we
never
do it, so it's not that kind of show.
Okay.
Maybe someday.
Someday we'll have
maybe
a guest.
Maybe someday we'll, but because we don't really follow a lot of rules on this show.
I've got the possibility of maybe being able to connect the telephone to the soundboard.
No way.
Yeah, it's going to take a little bit of work, but if that's the case, then we may actually have some...
Ooh.
Some guests who people recognize.
Do we really want to subject guests to us?
I'd love
imagine
to get...
if we had the end of somebody really cool like Dawkins. What are we going to do? Like, make funny voices at him?
Well, if we could find a terrorist, that'd be great, because it's
Mr.
okay to
Dawkins.
Torture terrorists.
It's funny that you should mention terrorism. This is September 9, 2006, 2 days before the, what, 5-year anniversary?
Uh-huh,
of moronic, theistic nitwits flying airplanes into big buildings and killing thousands of people?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucked.
Basically it.
That sucked. We're against that. We are broadcasting from Dillahunty International Studios. Our opening music was Pretty Vultures by 10 Inch Men from their 1992 album, also called Pretty Vultures. This show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. The ACA has weekly meetings at 11:30 a.m. every Sunday morning at Romeo's, 1500 Barton Springs Road in Austin, Texas, except for the third Sunday of each month when we have our lecture series. Lectures normally start at 12:30 p.m. at the Austin History Center at 9th and Guadalupe and are free and open to the public. However, this month's lecture, that's the September lecture, has been preempted by the ACA Town Lake Bat Cruise on September 23rd. More on that later. ACA Happy Hour is at Ninfa's Restaurant on Highway 183 every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. For more information, you can call the ACA voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visit the website www.atheist-community.org. Just a reminder, everybody out there, this is a podcast, but we also have a live broadcast every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time. You can participate in the live broadcast by logging into the chat room while we're live. For instructions on that, visit our own page, the Nonprofits, at www.nonprofitsradio.com. Hi, everybody. Did you have a good week?
I had an interesting week. I guess I'll call it good.
I had a fine week.
I don't want to go into details and bitch, but it was an interesting week. So, yeah. And actually, 2 weeks since the last...
Well, sure. But I only care about the last one.
Okay. The first one, you do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, you're on your own the week after the show.
The next week, I have to call Jeff and ask him permission for everything I do.
No. I'll just ask it how it was.
It was all right. How was yours?
Mine was fine. Both were fine. Both weeks.
I only asked about the one.
I understand we've all had some interesting discussions with theists offline in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We discussed yours before the show, guys, but let me jump in and do a quick thing about mine, and then we'll get back into yours and talk about them again when they're fresh. On City of Heroes... I'm flying around, minding my own business, and on the global chat channel, this announcement comes up for the Jesus Freaks supergroup, right?
Oh, boy.
So it's a player is announcing that they're looking for members for this superhero group in this online superhero game for Christians. So I messaged that person and I said, you know, what is it with you people? Do you have to make a Christian version of everything? And she said yes. So I said, you know, what's the problem? Are we non-Christians not good enough for you to associate with? And she starts backpedaling, going, well, I didn't say it was only for Christians. I said, fine, I'm an atheist, sign me up. So I joined the Jesus Freaks.
Cool.
Oh, my God.
And... And the first thing that happens is now in a super group on City of Heroes, there is it's a structure that players can start a group and invite other people into it, and you get to create these ranks in the group with different privileges within the group, like whether you can invite other members, whether you can edit the message of the day, all that kind of stuff, right? And she had named the ranks in the superhero group Believer, Saint. I forget what they were, but the lowest level one was Believer, and that's
right.
what I
that's
was
what
labeled.
You had to be, yeah.
So I said, I got on the super group chat channel, and I said, would you mind not labeling me a believer? Because I'm not one. And and she goes,
you're already causing trouble.
She goes, well, that's just what the ranks are called, tee hee. Yeah, but you said this super group was, you know, not just for Christians, that everybody is welcome, but I don't feel very welcome because first thing I step in the door and you're lying about me.
I think you're making a big assumption there because all it said was believer. It doesn't say what you believe. Maybe you believe those people are crazy.
I think I'm within bounds to say that in a Jesus group we're talking about freaking Jesus.
You won't even let me play devil's advocate.
I did. I let you.
Jesus is
advocate. I let you play that side and you lost.
And then he squashed you.
You want to switch sides?
And then you crucified me.
Well, that's what happens to that side.
We all have our crosses we must bear.
All right, so to make a long story short, because this is a long, long, long story. We went on quite some time, and finally she says to the most interesting bit was, okay, well, forget your beliefs and forget my beliefs. Just look at the universe. What do you see? I see a universe. Okay, but now look at it spiritually. I said, what do you mean spiritually? You know, look at its spirits. Are there spirits?
Yeah.
Yes. How do you know this? And her argument for why her proof that there were spirits was that I should go to Google and type in the words real haunted house and see how many hits I get. That was the proof.
At least she's got a testable thing.
So I said, you don't really think that the more hits you get on a subject in Google, the more true it is, do you?
Yeah, have her Google moon landing hoax.
And she goes, no. I said, well, then who the hell cares how many hits you'd get on Google? Oh, you're just not in the right mood.
Frame of mind.
You're just twisting everything
so
I
negative.
Say. You're not ready to talk. I am ready to talk. Maybe you aren't aware that I have been involved in atheist public access TV show and podcast for many, many years. I'm way ready to talk about this stuff. But she basically backpedals. Now, I've been back on City of Heroes in that character several times in the last few days. None of the other members of the supergroup have ever reappeared.
Wow.
There appears to be a small superhero group called the Jesus Freaks that has one active member who's an atheist.
You know what they did? I'll bet they went off and formed another group.
I bet you they did and just abandoned me.
Now,
in the meanwhile, it raised the question of whether this is even legal to have, whether it would be legal to have a player organization only for members of a particular religion. So,
I don't know
or
why,
whether that
why
would,
wouldn't
up, whether
it?
That would violate
the terms of service
of the game.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how it is in City of Heroes, but like in EverQuest or whatever, if you're forming a guild, you get to decide who gets in and who gets out. You completely do the administration, and you can kick people out for whatever reason.
Well, we looked up the rules. There are some rules, and the rules say that that you cannot found any player organizations inside the game based on any hateful ideologies. I don't know if they use the word ideologies, but that's what they meant.
Oh, great.
Right. You
and
can't
then there's
have
a
Nazi
laundry list. And there's
group.
A laundry list, and the relevant one is anti-religious. An anti-religious group would be a hate group, but
an anti-irreligious group wouldn't be?
That's the question. So, an email has gone in to the customer service people of City of Heroes to ask, if I want to start an anti-atheism player group, is that within the rules? and still waiting on a response.
See, the thing is that, you know, like, they may have been aware of that rule, which is why the Jesus freaks accepted the atheist, because that way they're not discriminating.
It's either that, or it's what she said it was, which is she believed God had just blessed her by sending somebody in to her that she could talk to.
Oh, really? Because the guy that I've been talking to,
one
of the things he's convinced of is that God sent me to him. I am answered prayer.
So let's hear your story now. What have you been up to?
Well, it's nowhere near done. But we had received an email about a guy who was wanting to, and I don't remember the initial email, but basically
this isn't the inflatable Earth guy.
No.
Okay.
No, the inflatable Earth guy I've written off. Although Tracy had a conversation with the inflatable Earth guy, and it's not, I mean, I laugh at his theory, but this is not,
I hope the
this
inflatable
was a
Earth
real valid scientific hypothesis in the 50s and 60s, and the only reason that it's discarded is because plate tectonics is a better explanation for all of the variables.
I'd be extremely surprised if that guy even knew that it had ever been an accepted scientific theory. I think he thinks he made it up, and because he calls it science, it is.
I don't think he thinks he made it up. There are plenty of other sites on this subject.
Really?
Oh, there's, I mean,
never
there's Wikipedia entries. It's just he looks really silly. I mean, I don't mean to make fun of him because I realize he's just trying to provide an example. But in that one, he stuck all the continents on a balloon and then blows up the balloon to show that as the Earth expanded, the continents moved to their current position.
This is a guy who has been sort of very occasionally calling our public access TV show for the last, 10, 12 years. He's been around for a long time.
And I don't mind. It's not so much that I think he's... Well,
I mind when he writes in and says, "You guys just don't believe me because you're afraid."
Yeah, lately there have been some people, you know, we get mixed emails on both of the shows.
Yeah.
You know, and there have been a lot of emails talking about how they're glad that we're patient and respectful to most of the callers. And then there are other people who write in about, you know, how this show is just negative hate, you know, faith-bashing hatred.
You're not ready to listen!
Yeah. But in any case, the guy that I actually had the conversation with wrote in to ask, he was looking for a rational, intelligent discussion of theology and doctrine and everything else. And
right off the bat.
I agreed because I enjoy those kinds of discussions, and I'm inevitably disappointed every fucking time.
You're not going to get one, I can
this
pretty
one's,
much
this
guarantee.
This one's far from being done, but in addition to a lot of other things, he sent me off to look at a book that's like 30 pages long online. That basically kind of sums up what his beliefs are, and that in a nutshell, he's in line with perhaps the Southern Baptist Convention, but discounts all of what he calls the heretical second coming nonsense, in that Jesus actually has already come again back in the first century
He thinks the rapture stuff is heretical because he thinks Jesus has already been and gone.
Yeah. So the book that he pointed me to. And I've got it. He wants me to do kind of like a critique of this book to point out what I think is flawed in it.
Did he write the book?
No. Somebody else did.
Okay.
But it's representative of his beliefs. And it's not uncommon. I mean, this is a...
Wow.
Kind of a...
I'd never heard of it before.
It's a fringe group, to be sure. Yeah. But they're of the opinion that their view is right and all organized religion and Christianity is wrong.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, though, while there are some insightful comments in the book, especially because there are difficult verses in the Bible that... translating from Greek, Aramaic, Hebrew, whatever, don't necessarily mean today what they meant back then, appear to contradict each other, appear to contradict known facts, and, you know, when Jesus is talking to the disciples and saying, I'll be back essentially before some of you have died, they think he meant it and that it literally happened. And that eliminates the objection that a lot of people have, which forces you to take that as metaphor. There's some good stuff in there, but it's a lot more of fitting the facts to things that you correlation, but not causing
fitting facts around the policy.
Yeah, and but the problem is
we heard that one before.
The problem with this book is that what starts off as I'm going to look at the Bible this way. Turns into here's why all these other religions have got it wrong. And they start off by attacking Scofield, who produced, you know, concordances and everything else, and focused on end-time prophecies, which have been adopted by, like, almost all major Christian organizations.
Well, that's kind of odd. That's the same way they attack evolution.
Yeah.
They say, we're going to prove creation, and then they proceed to bad mouth evolution.
Right.
Nothing
yeah,
but
bad mouth
evolution.
Where's there evidence that Jesus did, in fact, return within the lifetimes of those people?
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting to. I don't want to go on forever, but let me sum up.
I don't
want to
say that's glaringly obvious or anything, but...
That book begins that way and then turns into a big conspiracy theory bash that all of this misinformation about religion, going all the way back to the Revolutionary War, because Washington was a Mason, is due to Masons and Talmudic Jews and Rhodes Scholars and the Illuminati, and I was just like, wow, I thought I was going to have a rational, intelligent discussion, and now you're feeding me just tons and tons of conspiracy theory nonsense.
You need to mention Yog-Sothoth and Cthulhu and see if you can work those into the thing.
Well, he considers all this other modern Christianity to not actually be worshiping the God of the Bible, but it's actually Baal worship or Asheroth worship or something else. But without... I'm going on way too long. The point was, I cut him off at the knees and said, I'm not interested in nonsense that you can't prove. And here's a bunch of objections that I have to doctrinal things in theology. Here's a bunch of difficult verses. Here's some posers for you. Like, if God is all-powerful, knows everything, and is perfect, how could he create something imperfect? And if he did create something imperfect, how is it considered just for him to blame his imperfect creation for that imperfection? He bears ultimate responsibility. The guy completely avoided everything and came back with a claim, which I absolutely agree with, that either God is demonstrably provable or he doesn't exist. And cool. I was like, great,
yeah,
prove it. And he's like, I'd be more than happy to prove it just as soon as you send me the critique of this book that I wanted you to read.
Good God.
And I'm like, oh, man, would you stop tap dancing? You know, if you've got proof that God exists, it shouldn't matter what I think of some other book or anything else. Just provide the damn proof. I mean, you know, what I wrote him today was, don't you have a duty to provide that to anybody who asks? Wouldn't this be really the most important thing? Why add caveats and stipulations of you need to go read what somebody else said about, you know, Jews and Masons, and then once you tell me what you think, all right, I think it's crap. Now please prove God or shut the fuck up. It's really annoying.
Yeah. Wow. And this was a guy that emailed the, what, TV show?
I don't know if the email might have come to the TV show, it might have come to the...
I don't remember reading it, so it was probably TV.
President list or whatever.
Dennis, I understand you've had a little verbal adventure also.
Oh, yeah. But it was...
it's a text adventure.
Yeah, text adventure on alt atheism. Arguing with a idiot on there who's... unarmed.
When you say idiot, what do you mean?
Well, a theistic idiot who spouts out... Ends all his posts with, you know, in the loving blah, blah, blah of Jesus, blah, 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 and all this stuff. He issues mostly, you know, boilerplate responses and stuff like that. But
is he a right-wing fundamentalist?
I don't know.
Don't know. Where are you from?
I know he's a fundamentalist. I don't know if he's right-wing.
All right.
I was asking him, you know, he was talking about the Holy Spirit, and I was asking him, well, let's just for the sake of argument, grant that you're actually talking to something, that you're contacting something when you pray and you get guidance from the Holy Spirit, right?
Uh-huh.
How do you know it's the Holy Spirit? Did you ask for his ID? Did you have another Holy Spirit that you can compare this Holy Spirit to know it's a Holy Spirit? I mean, how do you know? And he has basically no response to that. He's just, I am knowledge that it's this. I go, no, at best you have a desperate hope that it's the Holy Spirit you're talking to, and not, say, some demon or whatever. You know,
That's
like,
exactly the same point I made that got completely ducked. Because if you're going to make the claim that your understanding of God is right and all these other people are worshiping a false God...
Right.
How do you distinguish between the two? How is it that you're not also worshiping a false god?
Right.
You have to have some way of knowing.
They all claim infallibility in their ability to identify gods.
It's the same thing with claiming true Christians. he's not a true Christian because this guy went off on Bush. Bush isn't a true Christian. He goes down to Bohemian Grove and worships Atheroth with all of his Skull and Bones buddies. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'll take Bush's word when he says he's a Christian because I have no way of defining.
Yeah, I'm in no position to contradict him.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't care. I care more about what he does on behalf of his beliefs than what he says his beliefs are. Actions speak far louder than words. And while I object to a lot of the core doctrines in Christianity and other religions, I object to them in Buddhism. I don't have the slightest problem with most Buddhists. They don't bother me. They don't try and push their beliefs on others. But I do think the idea of reincarnation is silly, unsupported nonsense. But I'm not going to go around, you know, harassing them because they don't take actions on behalf of those beliefs that I find dangerous or, you know, problems for others.
Huh. Wow. Yeah, and they like to say, you know, well, we have, you know, they're not true Christians because they don't follow the Bible teachings, right? You know, and I say, well, okay. Does that mean that's your opinion, right? They go, no, it's the Bible, you know. I go, oh, okay, so if I read the Bible, you are thus granting me permission to define who is a Christian and who is not. Because if I read the Bible...
only if you agree with them, because they're claiming they are also omniscient when it comes to the correct interpretation of the Bible.
But they assume that I'll come to the same conclusion that they do.
Or else you'd be wrong.
Or else I'd be wrong. They're infallible.
Russell is not with us today, but I know he had his own separate adventure online talking to a Christian. And I'm not going to tell the whole story here, but he's apparently talking to some guy who, when cornered about on issues of the apparently immoral commands of God in the Old Testament, like commanding rape and torture and stuff like that, and genocide, the guy's response apparently seems to be that, Russell, you don't understand, he's God, therefore whatever he says goes.
Oh, okay.
Which you know, and Russell asked for some advice on the discussion he was having, and this is how I even know about this conversation.
Right.
And this got me thinking about the whole analogy of God to a parent thing.
Oh, boy.
Because... The idea, the common argument that authority starts from God, and then he appoints people of lesser authority, and they appoint people of lesser authority, and they appoint people of lesser authority, but God is the overseer of all authority, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all hierarchical like that. Doesn't make any sense if you are a citizen in any nation like the United States that embraces the principle of rulership by the government by the consent of the governed.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any kind of democracy going on at all, if the people have any sort of voice at all within the politics of their nation on who's going to lead them, then that whole thing is short-circuited, right? Because that's authority going the other direction.
Right. And I'm stealing that, by the way, because I think that's a brilliant analysis.
But the way they get around that, and the argument that they make, is to bring up the analogy of parents and children.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What they need to establish, I mean, they can say, they could just call that an aberration. Government by consent of the governed. They could call it an aberration, or they could say, we do that in our country, but only because God said we could. Right? They can make that kind of argument.
Or maybe they look at it as like, it's, you know, government and rule of the governed is like class president sort of stuff here, but really the principal is in charge of the school.
Right. They could spin that kind of argument as long as they can argue that there is such a thing as inherent right to authority. And that's where the parent thing comes in. They can point at parents and children and say, look, nobody in government appoints the parent to be the ruler of the child. It just is. It's the natural way of things. And when they can point to that, then they can turn and say, you know, all that other stuff aside, God, by his very nature, is like that. He automatically just gets to be the ruler because of who he is.
I have an objection, but I think you're getting ready to get to it.
Well, maybe not, but I want to hear it because, you know, I want to be able to argue this in a completely ironclad way, and I may have missed something. But let me cover the points I've thought of. Okay, the problem with this is that children grow up and become the societal equals of their parents. And the parent has no fucking say in that. Right?
Right.
At some point, the child becomes, as far as authority is concerned, on equal footing with the parent. Now, this is a relatively modern thing, and I guess they could still try to argue, yes, but look back in the Ten Commandments, it says you must honor them. Well, you know, you can honor somebody without being, their inferior authority-wise. Mm-hmm. You can still you can honor a colleague. But, so what I want to do from now on is, any time I hear the parent analogy for God, is spin this little analogy, right? Daddy says, no, Timmy, you mustn't grow up. Because if you do, you might become my equal. And that is disrespectful of my natural authority over you. Therefore, you must not grow up, or else I will cast you into a lake of fire. That's the problem with the parent analogy. The
right.
Parent analogy includes the ability of children to grow up and become the equal of the parent authority figure. But in Christianity, the God prohibits ever becoming his equal. In fact, it's a sin, and you can go to hell for that, for even thinking about it. Yes, Matt, did I miss?
I think there's another problem with the parent analogy, in that while parents have general authority over their kids,
right,
they still have to answer. A parent can't do things to their children that violate a bigger law. And
that's a good point. And I thought of that. In fact, I used the words infinite regress when talking to Russell about this, and then I realized it's not an infinite regress. Ultimately, we want, you know, on our side, we don't want an infinite regress of authority, and Christians don't want it either. They just stop it at God, and they're more than happy to say God doesn't have to answer to any higher thing than that.
But what I'm saying is that if you're going to use that analogy, you can point out that parents can be right or wrong. They if they do things that violate this higher moral law, it's possible that a God exists, and this is pointed out in some extent in the Euthyphro dilemma,
right,
and he answers to an inherent, intrinsic, higher moral authority. And while this diminishes a lot of the conventional concepts of God, it's still something that's possible. You know, it's to me, it's a lot like saying, you have a creator God, but he still has to work within the established laws of the universe. He can mold planets or whatever else, you know, that's within his power, but he can't change the fundamental laws of physics. He has to operate within those parameters. And you could make a similar case along moral lines. But my thing is that if you're the child, yes, you can accept that the parent has authority over you. But that doesn't mean that you can't also object to things that the parent does and question those and say, why is this right? And the old because I said so argument is incredibly weak. So this idea that the laws from God are because he says so, that's equally weak.
That is a very good observation. And so depending on particular twists the Christian tries to go through to escape the argument, that very well might be something.
So usually they just kind of shrug off the contradiction. They,
right,
like this guy's doing with Russell, in saying that God's the authority, he's the potter, you're the clay, he can do whatever he wants with you. And if God tells you that it's okay to go kill somebody, then it's okay. And then they add this caveat that, but God wouldn't do that. And
and
the immediate response is always, if you believe in the Bible, that's exactly what God
did. The point I'm trying to make is that while there may be such a thing in some cases as legitimate inherent authority, right? Which is what they're trying to establish with the parent analogy.
I nodded.
While there may be such a thing as that, it is not legitimate to use that authority to reinforce and perpetuate that authority. That authority, that kind of authority, seems to have limits. And we see that with parents and children, that at some point the situation changes, mm-hmm. and it's perfectly okay for the kids to become authoritative equals.
I think the apologist response to that every single time is going to be, it is impossible for us to become God.
Then why is it a sin? Why is trying to do it a sin?
The arrogance of it?
And in any case,
crazy.
If it's impossible, it's because the God set it up that way. So then we have a parent. Then we have a parent who's giving his child injections or had him genetically engineered,
right,
so that he'd never grow up,
right?
And that's that is an abuse of legitimate inherent power.
One of my older responses to the parent-child argument was. Especially against Christianity, because, you know, Christians like to say that it's all about love, and we're trying to offer you the one path to salvation. And my thing is that if God's a parent and we're the children, then basically what he's done is constructed a torture chamber in his basement and said to the child, if you don't love me, I'm going to lock you down there forever. No way you can get out. And you've got one chance to agree. And if you ask any questions, you're going to get locked down there forever. So to say that this parent loves you and is offering you, he's offering you a way out of something he specifically created to torture you with.
It's a protection racket again.
Hey, I've had Christians tell me that the proof that God loves you is he is so freaking all-powerful compared to you, and yet he doesn't just kill you.
Yeah.
That's the proof.
Wow.
The proof that that little kid is a very good kid is that he's got the magnifying glass, but he hasn't actually burnt the ant yet.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, that was an eventful week. 2 weeks.
Yeah. And it's going to keep going.
What do you mean? Oh, that's sure.
I'm going to keep getting responses from this guy, and I know Russell's probably going to get another response from him. And even when it's over, there's always another one. For the past 2.5-3 years, I don't think a week's gone by where I haven't been in conversation in email with at least one, if not 3 or 4 believers, all trying to make arguments. And while I appreciate the fact that, you know, they're sincere and they're trying to justify things, it's the same things keep coming up. One of them suggested, I suggest you go do a Google search for Dead Sea Scrolls and Isaiah 53. And I said, obviously, you don't think I've actually considered any of this. I did a Dead Sea Scroll search on Isaiah 53 years ago. The reason you picked Isaiah 53 is because it's the only complete passage in the Dead Sea Scrolls. The rest of it's scraps. And it has changed very little from that version to other versions. But that doesn't prove anything. I don't know why people have it in their head that it was so hard.
Maybe he just wanted to
accurately
maybe
copy.
Maybe he just wanted to see how many hits you'd get on Google.
Well, people have in their this idea, and Josh McDowell pushed it very heavily, that the Bible is a reliable record, specifically because there are so few flaws which have been introduced into it. It's difficult. They think that it's somehow difficult for somebody to accurately copy a text by hand. And my point is that no, it's not. You're always going to get some mistakes because due to human error, and that's something you can accept. But it's not astronomically difficult for somebody to transcribe stuff. And when you've got hundreds of scribes in a room, each transcribing the same passage over and over and over again, they're not only going to get it right, they're going to have it memorized and be able to do it quickly with very little errors. I mean, this idea that, you know, it's so old that gross errors should have been crept in. No, that's not the way it is. And now, in the modern area, that sort of copying is error-free, essentially.
Right. All right. Well, let's have some announcements, shall we? Okay.
Announcements.
The 4th International Rationalist Conference, December 26 to 29 in New Delhi, India. For information, email conference@rationalistinternational.net. The ACA Town Lake Bat Cruise, which I mentioned earlier, will be on September 23rd at from 6 to 8. The price is $17.85 a person. Please pay in advance to an ACA, either with exact change or with a check made out to ACA. Give that payment to any ACA board member. And thanks to Joe Zemecki and Marla Repka for organizing that. Now, we had another email this, like minutes before the show. Did you get that from a guy who's a listener to the show
yes.
that wants to be on the Bat Cruise and but won't be, make it to an event? You got that
yeah,
covered?
Former ACA member. Okay. I'll respond to him later.
We actually got the email too late for me to include it in my notes for this episode.
If you happen to be listening right now, the person who emailed us, send an email, because I don't think he included his actual name or anything else. Send an email to me. You can email president@atheist-community.org. with your pertinent information, and I'll go ahead and cover your fees in advance, and you can just show up, and we'll have you on the list.
Okay, cool. The last presentation is a 38-minute educational video that targets social science high school classes on diversity, sociology, and comparative religion. The speaker, Sarah Price, presents a non-believer's point of view. To receive a free evaluation copy of the last presentation, see the contact information below. The video has already been created, but the cost of duplicating and mass mailing 16,000 DVDs will be $25,000. The fund to distribute the last presentation has been established. Yes, Matt?
I was going to wait
time. Oh. Established by the Freethinkers of Colorado, a 501c3 organization. They said that the fund was going to close by September 4th. I went to their website. They seem to be... They're only a little past halfway, and they seem to be keeping it open. In hopes of getting all the donations that they need before October 4 when they plan on doing the mailing. Go to www.cocore.org for info. Yeah, Matt.
So what was your take on that?
I haven't watched it.
Oh, I haven't seen it either,
I mean,
but I read the transcript.
I didn't read the transcript
and
either.
I'm a little torn. I've agreed with the idea of promoting this to listeners of both programs and ACA members,
yep.
to let people decide for themselves if this is something that they want to back.
Yeah,
I think I have some problems with it.
And with the way that they present atheism?
No. I think their presentation of atheism is right on the money, and I think the program is well written. The problem is that the program, it's a videotape that assumes that a lot of other people have already spoken on behalf of beliefs,
right.
and that atheism wasn't represented, so here's atheism's response.
Right.
Now, they're going to send this out to all the schools, or a bunch of schools. I don't know how many schools actually do that, bring in a Protestant minister, a Catholic priest, a Buddhist, you know, and everything else. And I'm a huge proponent of comparative religions as courses. I would make them a requirement, provided that they're non-proselytizing and, you know, just view everything as from a secular perspective. The problem that I see with potential problems I see with this DVD is that or whatever, it could promote by mailing it to a school that instead of playing this DVD in a response to other things, it could promote them to actually bring in those people that they weren't going to bring in, and they would give their presentations and may not even show that tape.
Yeah, I mean, but if that's the case, I don't see how you prepare material for comparative religion classes without that risk. I mean, how would you do it? How would you present that material without the risk that the school is going to say, "Hey, we could have comparative religion classes," and then throw out the atheism stuff?
Well, one of the things is that because this is non-interactive, it's just a static thing.
Yeah.
They could show it and have a Protestant minister come in and respond to the points that the atheist raises without the atheist having any chance to rebut. It could be misused.
Well, I certainly agree that it would be better to have an atheist in every school in every one of those classes. But better is, you know, I mean, Christians fucking lie about us all the time,
yeah,
every day. They're already, if the subject of atheism comes up in one of these comparative religion classes, they're going to fucking lie about us. That's
but
what they do.
I think what I'm saying is it's a form,
yeah,
by having people come in to talk specifically about what their beliefs are,
yeah,
you've moved away from an objective course that looks at beliefs, and you've moved closer towards proselytizing. And if some school isn't actually having people come in, this may promote them, or this may prompt them to actually have people come in and never show that tape and never get an atheist to come in. So they get an even more limited
potentially perspective. A fair point. I am of the opinion that if we don't start doing shit like this at some point, then we're never going to get anywhere. And doing something that is can potentially be abused, like, well, duh, that the Christians, people of practically all religions, will do everything they can possibly think of to come out on top. Well, okay, fine, but we got to start somewhere.
I think I pretty much agree. I'm not completely convinced that this is a hugely good idea. But
maybe a lot of people agree with you because they are only a little past halfway. But
well, the other thing
for
is
those
is
of you out there who agree with this, the www.cocore.org is the place to go for info.
The other thing is about image.
Yeah.
If a school isn't doing anything like this and people aren't doing it, and you send them a tape of, we want to present you the atheist viewpoint, then you end up look like the ones who are attempting to proselytize.
But if the Christians haven't already been there pressuring that school, then they're one of the lucky ones.
Well, what I'm saying is if you have a course, if you have a comparative religious course that is truly secular and looks at a variety of beliefs, and by sending this tape out, I agree it may be a good thing and it's pointing out concern. My concern is that it'll come off as we're not being represented at all, and we're going to represent our viewpoint, and it becomes atheist proselytizing.
We're going to get back to the subject of atheist proselytizing in one of the letters that we received from a listener.
Okay.
And let's get very
like
let's
I said, I haven't made a decision.
That then.
I'm just torn about possible problems. And I didn't send in money because I haven't quite made up my mind yet.
Fair concerns. But they're running out of time. Okay, so if anybody out there knows of any events or groups or websites you think deserve mention on our show, please let us know by emailing nonprofits@atheist-community.org. And now on to listener mail.
Ooh.
How are we doing on time? Okay, that's plenty.
Dum, dum, dum.
By the way, that same email address, nonprofits@atheist-community.org, is a great place to send in your email responses to the show, like the ones I'm about to read. If you don't want an on-air response to your email, then please say that in your email, and we will respond to you privately instead. In many cases, you'll hear from us in email also. Ben writes, you discussed an email from a Christian who talked about mitochondrial Eve. The mitochondrial Eve idea states that all humans living at this exact moment in time share their mitochondrial DNA with a single female ancestor at some point in history thousands of years ago. However, as time progresses from this exact moment, people die, lineages disappear, and the identity of mitochondrial Eve changes. Thus, for every new generation of humans, there is a new mitochondrial Eve who lived at a different time than the previous mitochondrial Eve. So it isn't even possible for mitochondrial Eve to be the biblical Eve, since the identity of mitochondrial Eve is constantly changing.
Cool. I'm not saying he's wrong, but I'm not sure that that's actually accurate.
I'm not sure either, because I don't know how that would work.
Once you form a tree, what expands off of it still goes back to the same point. Now,
right. In order for there to be some... But to be
I know what
different,
he's saying.
No, but hang on. In order for there to be a different mitochondrial Eve, there has to be a separate lineage of humans in the first place who already trace their lineage back to a different mitochondrial Eve, and then, what?
No. Imagine a tree.
Yeah.
Essentially, with one node that leads to two nodes that leads to four nodes.
Uh-huh.
If one of the two main lineages off of the first one completely dies out, then the first
right.
second node becomes a new mic. That's what he's talking about. So
I
he's right.
I think that's less rare, less common.
Yeah, you'd have to have a core lineage, one of the original lineages completely die out. But early on,
yep.
You know, if you took on a biblical perspective, and where you started with actually two people, then the odds of lineages dying out does increase, and therefore it would have shifted more during yeah. the early formation of the species.
Right. Okay, now this, Ben referred to a single female ancestor thousands of years ago, but in fact, the stories that we wrote talked about one more like several centuries ago.
Right.
Jacob says, the statement that everybody who lived during the 13th century or even 8th century is either the ancestor of somebody or nobody seems absurd. Some human communities were and remain very isolated. My guess is that no native Australian or an Inuit person from the 13th century is my ancestor, yet their descendants do exist. Okay, now, Jacob is objecting to the hundreds of years thing.
Right.
He goes on to say, according to the article Modeling the Recent Common Ancestry of All Humans, by Rode DL, blah, 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 blah. There's a tiny URL. tinyurl.com/JNEF4. Once again, tinyurl.com/JNEF4.
I hope that's still active.
Oh, yeah, I think he made the tiny URL himself. Dawkins' concessor, or MRCA, lived a few thousand years ago. This sounds like a far more realistic estimate than 1,000 years ago. Okay. First of all, I want to start by saying I don't know why anybody fucking cares. I don't get it. To me, this seems like, whatever the answer is, it seems like such an incredibly picayune, you know, trivial thing that I don't understand why anybody cares enough to do the research in the first place, and I certainly don't understand why anybody, having heard what the results are, gets bent out of shape because it doesn't make sense to them. I don't fucking care, personally. It reminds me of a Greg Egan short story where he talks about, it's a science fiction story where there are competing theories of who mitochondrial Eve was, and like protests break out between people who want to believe that the first female ancestor was in that the most most recent common female ancestor was in the Middle East versus those who want to believe she was in Europe versus those who want to believe she was in the Far East, right? And then
right.
it gets worse when some new procedure is developed that determines who the most recent common male ancestor was. And then, like, violence breaks out. I mean,
right.
I don't understand why people get so fucking bent out of shape about this. Now, I also have not done the research myself, and I'm content to go, huh, how fascinating when one of these guys says something and wait for it all to shake out. It is true, and I'm pretty sure we mentioned this in the episode where we talked about this issue, that it is true that there is contention among those people researching this thing about how to do the calculations and where this person is. But I also seem to recall that we covered the subject of whether it was hundreds or thousands of years ago, and that we mentioned arguments made by Russell, I think, read this, arguments made by people arguing for a more recent date. It's not our job, though, to do the science, here on this show. It is
right.
not our job to do the fucking science or even necessarily understand it. We're some morons with a podcast. You want to find out what's going on about this stuff, just read the science, and, you know, I assume if there's controversies, they will work it out, and eventually we'll get more and more accurate things. But, Jacob, I just want to take a few moments for a little criticism. Jacob, you seem to be have gotten confused between the thing about when in time everybody alive was either an ancestor of everyone or an ancestor of no one, and the mitochondrial Eve thing. Those are actually two different issues. Because
right.
The mitochondrial Eve the mitochondrial Eve is supposed to be the most recent common female ancestor of everyone. And the question of when it was in history that everybody was either someone's ancestor or nobody's ancestor is a completely different question. And it seems to me from your email that you're sort of arguing about both of them at the same time in a way that's not clear. On the specific statement, my guess is that no native Australian or an Inuit person from the 13th century is my ancestor, yet their descendants exist. Again, I mean, that's got... I don't know, maybe I'm confused. You know what? I'm going to back off, Jacob. I'm not sure I even understood what you were saying. My fault, because I don't know. We're just trying to present some information. Look it up. I encourage you to read the tiny URL Jacob sent, which may explain things better.
I don't know where Jacob's tiny URL goes, but there is quite a few articles on mitochondrial Eve at talkorigins.org, including
okay.
One. If you go to talkorigins.org/FAQs/HOMs, HOMS/mitoeve.html. I linked it in the chat channel.
Mitoeve.
There's a lot of things that they point out here. Number one, that the name Eve in retrospect is perhaps the worst possible name to give to the entity in question.
Yes.
That's the exact problem.
This
the,
is what
the young
when
Earth creationists
get cute.
Yeah, the young
Earth. The reason we're talking about it on this show is because some Christians tried to take advantage.
Yeah, the concept is an actual real evolutionary biology concept that wouldn't even work, as somebody pointed out in the chat channel,
yeah,
with this young Earth nonsense, because the past 4,000 years of humanity is like a nanosecond to evolution. It's completely irrelevant.
Right. Let's move on. Donald wrote, "Do you know that the audio file for this week's episode 5.15 starts with almost 20 minutes of silence?" That was, of course, 2 weeks ago, the previous episode, and we caught that, and Matt fixed it. But this brings up just one little issue that I encountered in trying to verify that it had been fixed. I use iTunes to listen to our podcast, and there is no way, once you have downloaded an episode, there is no way in iTunes that I was able to find to say, I want you to go check to see if there's a more recent version of this file, and if so, get it for me. If I delete it, there is no way to ask for it to send it to me again.
Ooh.
I find that kind of hard
now,
to believe.
But. Now, there are many podcasts which have a page where you can, like, click on an episode and say, send me that one. We don't have a thing like that. We do have a page where you can just go and download the audio, but it's not a not through the podcasting
system. We have a podcast XML page that's updated, and if you have a podcast software that's capable of listing what's available, it will show you every available file that's on that list.
Maybe I just don't know how.
Well, the problem is iTunes. Well, everybody gets, I don't have an iPod. I don't use iTunes.
Yeah.
I do appreciate iPods, and I've thought about getting one. I hate the iTunes software. And
okay.
One of the things, this isn't the first problem that our show has had. There were some of the older shows that the file information, because iTunes was evidently using some kind of proprietary label to show everything else, it wouldn't play on other podcast software.
So I fixed that
by going to more generic.
What I did, by the way, for those people using iTunes who may have gotten the episode with the extraneous 20 minutes of silence, what I finally did do is I unsubscribed from the nonprofits podcast and then resubscribed to it, and it cleaned everything out and started over fresh, with the added advantage that it went ahead and deleted a bunch of things I'd already listened to for me. So that's that. Donald goes on. Did that have anything to do with the denial of service attack you mentioned? No. The denial of service attack turned out not to be what we thought.
Turned out to be, and here I thought I was talking about how good my kung fu was for for tracking him
it
down.
It was way fun to think about.
It was fun. I, you know, it was like, you know, because nobody's going to hack into my machine for the most part, so trying to backtrack everything and running trace routes was fun.
Uh-huh.
Turns out it was just one of our regular listeners, somebody we actually like and appreciate, who had some problem on his machine that was causing it to flood attempts to connect.
So the answer is no, it didn't have anything to do with the 20 minutes of silence, and no, in fact, we didn't actually have one of those.
The 20 minutes of silence was me being sloppy when I edit. After every show's over, because so I don't forget recording, I usually start recording about a half hour before we start while I'm doing setup. And I just didn't clip off that half hour. So
He concludes, thanks for ironing out the sound problems. Recent episodes have sounded much, much better than they used to. Kudos to Matt.
Yeah, well.
All right.
I think it was a matter of Matt listening to Russell, but.
Kudos to Matt and Russell. Chris says, the Discovery Institute has a podcast. Go to idthefuture.com and see what the other side is up to. I just don't have the stomach to download or listen to it myself, he said.
You know, there are a lot of really good podcasts like ours that I would listen to, but I figure as long as I don't actually have the time to listen to all of those, like I don't get to listen to all of Reggie's shows, I don't get to listen to all the Hellbound Ali's, and there's, you know, bunches and bunches of other ones. If I don't have time to listen to all those, there's no fucking way I'm going to go download the Discovery Institute's podcast. You know.
Speaking of Reggie's show, and speaking of Buddhists who you don't hate, he had one on recently that you would hate. I hated him.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There was this episode where Reggie interviews this, it's Reginald Finley, the infidel guy, for those of you who don't know who we're talking about, who has an excellent show that's been going on longer than ours, and it kicks ass.
Who we'd like to hear from, by the way.
We got some contact information that I have for Russell.
It's fine. I don't mean to hack on I've been wanting to talk to Reggie for a while.
We are a bunch of irresponsible boobs at this end, and that's why we're not done with that. But Reggie had this guy on who is arguing that there's no such thing as a self. And it was from a Buddhist...
That's Buddhist philosophy.
Yeah, but
everything is illusion.
It was fucking awful. Oh, man, I was yelling at my computer listening to that idiot.
Yeah, I object to all of that nonsense, but I don't... It's rare to find a Buddhist who's pushing his ideas, and it's certainly rare to find one that's
this guy
encouraging
was a
others to act.
Buddhist.
Yeah. In that case, I don't like you, but...
Okay. Cecilia in Toronto, right?
Oh, and I got an email. I think he probably sent it out to everybody. He's having Sam Harris on. I don't know.
Reggie's having Sam Harris?
Yeah, let me get the date, because we might as well pimp for his show, too.
All right. While you're looking that up, Cecilia in Toronto writes, you fellas probably saw this back in the spring, but it hit the atheismabout.com board today, so I'm just pointing it out to you. In May, the Church of Freethought, located near Dallas, Texas, was granted a tax exemption like other churches and religious organizations. Did we know this?
Yes.
I don't remember knowing
this. I knew
this.
I brought a news story of it a while back, but I didn't get a chance to read it, and so it fell by the wayside.
Texas has become notorious for resisting granting the same rights and privileges to non-theistic religious groups as traditionally theistic ones, but the courts have consistently ruled against the state in such matters. In a press statement praising the Texas agency's reversal, Americans United Executive Director Barry Lynn said, "This is a victory for religious freedom. Government must never play favorites when it comes to religion." The Church of Freethought enjoyed federal tax-exempt status, but was unable to obtain a similar status in Texas. The tax agency had insisted that the church, quote, appears to be a discussion or social group rather than a religious organization, unquote. Texas officials have expressed hostility toward non-theistic religious groups. In a past dispute, Comptroller Carol Keaton Strayhorn, isn't that the same Carol Keaton Strayhorn who wants to be our governor now?
Yes.
Anybody who believes her crap about she is, a nonpartisan political outsider,
right?
That is bullshit. They're trying to float a Republican who is pretending not to be a Republican.
Oh boy!
To be our next governor. That's my personal opinion. She said giving tax exemption to such groups would lead to applications from quote, any wannabe cult who dresses up in parades down 6th Street on Halloween, unquote.
Ooh,
you
nice.
Know what, you fucking bitch? A cult that parades down 6th Street on any day, any cult where they parade on Halloween or 6th Street at all, is just as much deserving of as tax-exempt status if they're a religion as any other group.
They're all cults. Cults there was a quote from the 4400.
Cults are religions. Huh?
There was a quote I heard on one of the 4400 episodes, and he said, cult is what the large congregation calls the small congregation.
Yes.
Right.
And it's absolutely right on.
Uh-huh.
So if, you know, you want to call about a cult who dresses up on Halloween, you know, what about your Jesus cult that dresses up on Sundays and pretends to be shit they're not?
Yeah. Carol Keaton Strayhorn. Any Texas listeners, we don't like her. Probably.
Maybe.
Okay. Jared wrote, just thought I'd update you on the school presentation mentioned in my previous email. Remember this?
Yeah.
This is the teacher who's at his school.
Yep.
He got a fundamentalist Christian principal, if I recall correctly. He says, the presentation was technically secular, but had subtle religious overtones throughout, as you predicted. Now, we don't predict stuff here on the
Anonymous.
We hypothesize.
We predict. We just don't claim any supernatural.
We don't prophesy, but we predict.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's not a spiritual insight prophecy.
I predict we'll make more predictions.
I predict you're right.
See? I win.
It says it had subtle religious overtones throughout, as you predicted. You were accurate in that this was an opportunity to promote an overtly religious assembly to be held that evening. Flyers were distributed to the students indicating when and where it was to be held. I'm not sure if the flyers indicated that it would be a religious event, since I was not offered one. But that is, Jared, I'm telling you, that is the purpose of handing out the flyers, is to get the kids out of the context of school so they can say whatever the fuck they want to them. The attempt at religious mind control was mostly limited to symbolic and culturally nested items like references to the book or the light. It also had some openly religious items like a skit that featured an angel and a guy in heaven. This seemed to be on less solid constitutional footing, but it might be argued that the play was not endorsing belief in those things, merely using them as a setting for dramatic purposes. Well, yeah, but no Christians use such things merely for dramatic purposes. It's always got a point. We're talking about a religion that is geared toward turning its followers into proselytizers. That's its job.
Right.
So, now, if I wrote a skit about angels and a guy in heaven, I would have been using it for dramatic purposes. But when the Association of Christian Athletes does it, they are making a point.
Right. They are proselytizing.
And I just want to say, Jared, I think you're not quite hard-nosed enough about this stuff yet. Even references to the book. What do you mean, the book? What fucking book? Make them say what book. If they won't say, they're merely trying to get away with talking about the Bible without getting caught.
Yeah,
right?
Right. So, did you have more on that one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A play set in Middle Earth, he goes on, would not be an endorsement of belief in the existence of Middle Earth. That's true, but it would as soon as you got your first Middle Earth worshiper. What were the gods? There were gods that Tolkien made up for Middle Earth, right? They had some name. If you had some dickweed who believed in them and worshipped them, and then did a play about them, we are out of the realm of mere literary reference.
Right.
They did manage to slip in at least one amen and the usual slippery slope fallacious arguments about behaviors such as drug use and premarital sex, along with the ever-present oversimplification of problems both in the world and in our lives.
Oh, boy.
I think the influence on the kids was minimal, both because not many kids seem particularly inspired, and also because most of the students are already firmly entrenched in their family religion. I feel this was a good example of a situation in which I have to choose my battle. Well, that may well be, Jared. You of course, are the one in the position to decide that, not us. This area is so steeped so firmly in fundamentalist and Christian and conservative Christianity that the display I witnessed was probably more secular than I should have expected. I'll keep you informed of any thoughts or events I feel might interest you, or perhaps occasionally send a rant or two. Yes, please do.
Yes, please do.
Jared, that would be very welcome. we sure do need to hear from people on the front lines in our public schools about what the hell's going on there. Yeah, Matt.
Two quick things. The actual Reggie had Sam Harris on last night.
Ah, hell.
But I know he archives those so people can listen to
him. Podcast them.
Yeah.
I get it on iTunes.
And I've heard from people in the chat room. It was great.
Oh, great.
The other thing, as long as you're talking about religious crap in schools.
Yeah.
The Oregon Supreme Court rejected the discrimination claim of an atheist whose son was required to attend a Boy Scout recruiting session in Portland public schools. A lower court had already ruled in favor of her, and the Oregon Supreme Court overturned that. Basically, their claim was that the recruiting process treats all students the same. It's only later when they actually go to become scouts that they actively discriminate.
Uh-huh. So the school is simply pleading ignorance of the religious bias.
The school isn't pleading anything.
The school required him to attend the recruiting session?
Yeah.
So the school is pleading ignorance of the religious nature of the Boy Scouts. They're saying, we just required everybody to go to this thing. We had no idea that it was going to be religious proselytizing. No?
The school isn't pleading anything. The school isn't on trial for anything, and nobody's accusing the school of doing anything wrong.
Who's the lawsuit against?
The Boy Scouts.
Well, yeah, okay, I agree with that. I mean, the Boy Scouts could not force that kid to attend their event. The school did.
Well, the question is, should the Boy Scouts be allowed to come into schools and pimp their product when it's discrimination?
But again, it's the school letting them in. They're going after the wrong target.
The school may not necessarily be able to say no.
But if the school can't say no to, the Boy Scouts using their facilities, which is a valid situation that has come up, right? It's perfectly legal if schools say any group can come in and reserve use of our facilities after hours, right? That is legitimate access by the Boy Scouts, even if they're a religious organization.
Yeah, as long as they're doing it fair.
Right. But as soon as the school requires the kid to attend the event, it's the school that's at fault.
Well, I definitely think the school is at fault for that.
Okay.
But the question is, this isn't an event. This isn't an after-hours use of an event. This is them coming in advertising their product to all the little kids at the school. And what it is it ends up being divisive because you get Johnny and Jimmy are both sitting there saying, yeah, let's go be scouts. And when it actually comes time to go join the scouts, Johnny's allowed in and Jimmy isn't. And you're promoting... You're allowing a private organization that discriminates on grounds which would be...
Oh, I see.
...to come into a public government-funded
building. So given that it's the behavior of the scouts that was being... that the lawsuit was targeting, right? You're telling me that the Boy Scouts won in court by saying... We treated them all equally.
No.
What?
That's what the judge's main decision was. There was one dissenting judge, and I would imagine this will head up to the Supreme Court, whether or not they hear it, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
The dissenting judge said that while the scouts' offer appeared to be open to all the elementary school children without limitation, that wasn't the case. The offer, both in fact and in operation, divided the elementary school children into two groups, those whose religious views agreed with the scouts' views and those who did not. And he, you know,
right.
Well, that's why he was the dissenting opinion.
Wow.
But the lower court had ruled in favor of the mother because it's discrimination.
Right.
You know, it's okay for them to discriminate as a private organization. However, when they come onto public school government-funded grounds to...
Okay, I guess that's the part that I was
to portray themselves as an organization that anybody can come to, only to find out later.
I guess that's the part I was having trouble with, because it seems to me that the responsibility for what goes on the public grounds falls to whoever is in charge of making that decision, and that's not the scouts, that's the school. As I understood it.
Obviously the school is going to be involved in this and somehow, because whether or not they should be allowing this or requiring this or anything.
Is it possible, here's me being all cynical and stuff, but is it possible that there are parallel lawsuits here, that they went ahead and did one against the scouts just in case, but also one against the school district.
Yeah, that's,
and is it possible that the fact that they lost against the scouts, when I think that the scouts are the wrong fucking target, right? That that's being touted as some sort of failure by the liberal, anti-religious people, and that's why it made news?
Could be.
Because that kind of thing happens all the time. I mean, one charge, one indictment against Tom DeLay gets thrown out, and that's this gigantic news story. Oh, Tom DeLay is an indictment against him that's thrown out. Right, when there's like four other indictments against him that are still there. I'm sick of that kind of shit.
I don't know. And actually, looking at it, there may have been a case actually against the school, but the way it was worded against the Boy Scout in the report.
Huh.
So I have to look into that more. But regardless, the mother had initially won. The Oregon Supreme Court overturned it, and now she's lost. And I don't know if she's going to get a chance to appeal to the Supreme Court or not. But you know, because I agree, if the Boy Scouts are a private organization, they can discriminate just like the KKK.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they have the right to come in to public schools.
Right.
You know, my tax dollars and my kids shouldn't be required to hear their spiel.
Suppose, let me just make some shit up here, right? Suppose the rules at the school are, you may use our facilities after hours for anything you like, but you have to sign this statement saying that you are non-discriminatory and you will abide by all these, you know, federal statutes and stuff, right? And you have to sign that in order to be let in. And the Boy Scouts signed it and then reneged. Now you've got something to go after the Boy Scouts about. I know there's nothing like that in the news story. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That would make sense to me.
Well, what they got right now is like... one thing I mentioned earlier was the Klan could come in and say, "Hey kids, you want to all dress up like ghosts? All right, come to our meeting," you know. And so the kids go, "Yeah," and they all go to the meeting, and oh no, little so and so, you can't come in.
Dress as ghosts on Halloween.
Right.
Yeah, but the point being that it's false advertisement, because when the black kid shows up there,
you can't dress up as a ghost.
We don't allow the black kids to do that.
Yeah. Right.
But on the school grounds, they were all inclusive.
Yeah, it's this big false advertising crap where they get to come in and pimp falsely their product and require everybody to be there, only to find out later that they're, you know, because their divisiveness has now become a problem within the school.
Right.
Where kids can no longer spend time with their friends who would have been friends otherwise, specifically because of what the scouts are doing. They're a bunch of asshats.
Yeah.
Because we haven't used that word today.
Oh, thank you. I think we may have dropped that word for a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Everybody get your scorecards out. That's asshats 1. Dickweeds... I don't know. I've lost count.
Asshats, yeah. You can take a drink now. Yeah, that's it.
Let me... That's the non-profit's drinking game. Every time one of us says asshat, you have to take a drink. So listen carefully for us to say asshat. Because when we say asshat, you have to take a drink.
Oh, man, they're blitzed now.
And if you don't take a drink, you're an asshat. All right, what else we got?
Last one, Jacqueline from Lubbock, Texas.
Ooh.
Jacqueline, you have my pity already. From Lubbock, Texas says,
"Oh boy.
I recently discovered your podcast and just love the clear-cut logic.
Woo-hoo.
Recently, while studying for confirmation in the Roman Catholic Church, I began to realize I was an atheist. I also began to read into the Church of Satan, and out of curiosity, I bought the Satanic Bible." Yes, Matt.
I want to interrupt for a second because she did something there at the beginning that I've done and I always like when I hear people do.
Yeah.
And that's that she pointed out that she realized she was an atheist. It's not even, you know, I talk about my deconversion from Christianity, my process that led from Christianity to atheism. But I didn't convert to atheism because atheism isn't something, I just got to the point where I realized I no longer believe this stuff. It's not that I believe the exact opposite for sure. I just no longer believe it. And that realization, I think that's an important phrase that tends to get overlooked.
I didn't
I agree. I'm just trying to find my place again. Out of curiosity, I bought the Satanic Bible. I mostly bought it out of spite for the students and teachers at my school who like to preach about the Bible.
Human reaction.
Yeah, not the best reason to buy a book,
but hey.
If you read it and found it interesting, that's fine.
Yeah.
Although I found some truths to it as to what I feel, I don't get the whole magic hoopla. Well, my mom found the book, and after being angry with me, she soon forgave me and realized I was only exploring other ideas. But she still wants me to pray and stuff like that. Even though she realized that they don't worship Satan, she still thinks that all they do is have sex and have vengeance on other people.
Hey, the sex is good enough by itself.
Yeah, I mean,
wow.
If I'm having enough sex, I'm not really so concerned about vengeance.
No, yeah. No, vengeance is like secondary.
Now, if I'm not having enough sex,
somebody's
got to
pay.
Usually, that's usually not somebody else's fault. Let's see. So she asked me to burn the book, which I won't, and I just continue to hide it from her. Why does my family keep forcing religion down my neck? I believe the word you're looking for is throat.
Throat, yes.
A neck is the outside. The throat is the inside. When people shove things down, it's the throat.
I'm also
we're just using clear cut logic here, Jacqueline. Like you said, you liked.
I'm also curious. You know, a lot of this book burning. You know, her mom wants her to burn the book.
Why burn?
What does burning actually accomplish?
Because isn't you donating it to the local public library sufficiently get it out of your house?
Oh, no, because I guess it's a way of permanently removing one copy, but the thing is there are plenty of copies, and even if there weren't, you can't burn ideas.
Right.
Although
limit exposure.
The Catholic Church tried quite often.
And is it worth the guilt by association sort of thing? The book burning, I mean,
to me, it's like washing the kid's mouth out with soap.
Can you burn ideas?
Ideas?
Yeah, ideas. People that like intelligent design.
Maybe so.
They got some great ideas over there. Over there at the Discovery Institute. I love the Discovery Institute. I listen to all their ideas.
As opposed to ideas, yes.
Why don't you run over to the Discovery Institute and get us some kindling?
Why does my family keep forcing religion down my
throat?
I have told her that I don't agree with everything, but she still thinks of me as a Satanist. She can't think of me just as an atheist. Do you have any advice? What? To make somebody else think something different than they think?
We have no magic wand.
There's argumentation, and that's about it.
Yeah.
There's persuasive argumentation. That's about all you can do. And the people are going to close their minds, even if it's your mom. I don't have any advice. I mean, luckily I'm not in that position. Matt, you're in that position more than me. With your folks thinking that you're a minion of Satan now.
Well, yeah, my dad's actually going to be in town.
And you haven't even read the Satanic Bible, or have you?
No, I have not read the whole Satanic Bible. I've read bits and pieces of it. I did.
You look for the contradictions?
No, I studied all kinds of different pieces.
Satan light. Yeah.
I studied all kinds of different ideas about religion and philosophy and God and whatever, and I didn't want to leave any stone unturned as long as, I could.
Uh-huh.
My dad's actually going to be down in San Antonio next week, and I'm going to drive down on Monday for dinner.
Uh-huh.
For the people, I hate to go off about my personal things, but while my parents didn't take it well, and even like for my 37th birthday, my birthday card was a sermon on the prodigal son, and then in big capital letters underlined at the bottom it said, "We're praying for God to stop you no matter what the cost," which,
whoa,
that to me, happy birthday, if
wow,
that was the only time that I ever thought of my parents and the words fuck you immediately came to mind. But I realize that that's just kind of their knee-jerk reaction. And
that would get you stoned.
Stone the unruly child and those who don't honor.
But they are
getting better, and they're able to actually carry on conversations on the phone. My mom sent me a note the other day in the mail that had no references to God or the Bible or anything.
Wow.
And it's the first time in my entire life that's happened.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Go ahead.
Cool. That we hope God will intervene no matter what, changing no matter what, reminded me of something that was said to me on City of Heroes by this Christian I was debating with. She said that she wants to go to heaven, but she just wants to make sure she takes as many people with her as possible. I kid you not, that is literally what she wrote.
Funny, that's something I've heard from some Islamic extremists.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure she didn't mean it like that. I just wish that they would at least be more careful about how they put things. Because, you know, my eyebrows can only go up so far. All right, moving on. Jacqueline continues. Recently, upon the start of college, a boy in my theater class mentioned ghosts. And I told him that when I was younger, I wanted to be a parapsychologist. And he preached to me. And when I said I was an atheist, so his views didn't apply to me, he preached some more.
Of course.
I asked him, doesn't that counter the idea of free will? He asked me if I was trying to convert him to atheism, and I just laughed. If I wasn't selfish, yeah, I would care that they are still in ignorance and refuse to accept evidence. But I am very selfish, so I don't care if they are ignorant or not. That would make me no better than the Christians trying to convert me. Okay, this I have some comments about. Hmm. This whole
it's weird.
Proselytizing atheism thing. I think there's, I know a lot of atheists, and in the atheist community of Austin, which, you know, the local atheist group here in Austin that I've been a member of since many, many, many years now, there have been many discussions about this question of how, should atheists try to enlighten others as to the reasons for atheism? Or not, and even if they should, how should that be done? And you know, we struggled with this for a long time, and I think the breakthrough in my mind came after I'd been doing our public access TV show for some time, and I realized, you know, our show was the Atheist Experience is technically the purpose of the show is outreach to other atheists and education of Christians and other people in the public about who atheists are, what we're like, and all that stuff. And I came to the realization, you can't inform somebody about your beliefs without getting into the territory of potentially, you know, convincing them
right.
that your beliefs
changing
are actually
their
right.
Mind.
Now, this is not organized proselytizing. Right? It's not
right.
preaching. It's merely communication. You can't avoid, unless you simply, like many atheists do, if you simply keep your beliefs to yourself, keep your opinions and mm-hmm. viewpoints and knowledge and insights to yourself, and don't say anything, that's about the only way not to get into the territory of preaching. So, to me, the difference between an atheist, or the difference I'd like to see between atheists and theists, is not that theists try to convert people and atheists don't. The difference I'd like to see is when atheists try to make a point, we do it with the facts and with reason and logic. Because when Christians try to make a point, they do it with hand-waving, with Bible-thumping, with emotional appeals, with all this irrational crap. That's the difference. I don't think for a second we ought to refrain from making our point. And, yes, Matt, go ahead now, because I got more to say, but I'll go
back. Well, I was going to say something similar, and that's that if you can consider, I encourage everybody to use their brain, to think critically, to be skeptical, to go for facts, to rely on rational, reasonable arguments. If you consider that proselytizing, I'll wear the badge. Just in the same way that a science teacher teaching a kid about chemistry or a math teacher teaching a kid about math, they're proselytizing on behalf of the math.
Yeah, well,
you're just trying to convince somebody about reality.
Right. Think of it as not proselytizing atheism, but proselytizing reason. And atheism is a inevitable result of
right.
proselytizing reason.
That's a very good point. If you're, as long as you're, I think you don't have anything to worry about, you know, ethically speaking. As long as your primary concern you know, telling people the truth and encouraging them to think clearly and rationally, right? You don't have a problem. If your motivation was, I want to make as many people atheists as possible, and you didn't care, if you didn't care about the facts or the arguments or the logic or the reasoning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was your only goal, yeah, that would be pretty sick and creepy.
Now, there was an interesting post on Alt Atheism a while back. It asked, if you had the perfect argument that would inevitably deconvert, you know, to convert to atheism, anyone you presented that argument to automatically, right?
Yeah.
Would you use it?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Every day and twice on Sunday. Well, one of the things is that maybe the distinction is not about whether or not you're proselytizing. It's like you're pointing out the motivation behind it and what you're using as justification. Because, I mean, the strict definition of proselytizing is to encourage or induce somebody to join a religious movement, political party, or other cause or organization.
We're so asking them to abandon them.
any encouraging words to accept your position over somebody else's is proselytizing. The thing is, can you back it up with anything that's justifiable?
Right.
And in the case of what we end up doing on the show, technically,
are we trying to make more atheists, or are we trying to make less theists?
Well, not even less theists, less fundamentalists.
I don't know if this is going to be a direct repeat of something I just said, but I really want to make this point strongly, particularly for Jacqueline, because she brought it up. The too many atheists, I think, the impressions that we have of religion is that it's annoying because they're always trying to convert us. Well, okay, but that's not what's really wrong with religion. What's really wrong with religion is that it's not true, right? The beliefs aren't true. That's why when they try to convince you, that's why it's annoying, because they're trying to convince you of something that's false.
I think it may be better than to say it's not true than it's not proven.
It's not justified.
I agree. It's probably not true. But the real complaint is that they haven't proven the thing.
You are technically more correct. But that is the reason why it's annoying. They're trying to get you to believe something that they can't actually prove, and it's all a bunch of cheating and manipulating and
hand-waving.
And going back to the KKK. I mean, the KKK is trying to convince people that their ideas of white supremacy are true and valid. Now, if they had justification for that, it might make their beliefs true, even though I would still have, you know, moral ethical objections to them. But the fact is that they don't back it up with anything. It's just an opinion. And tossing out your opinion and trying to convince people of it without justification is just stupid.
This is a bit of a leap out of the subject, but that what you just brought up, Matt, reminds me of something else that I like to say a lot. Christians are always coming at us when we talk about ethics and morality, right? They're always coming at us trying to get us to explain how we know that Hitler was wrong if there's no big imaginary guy up in the sky making the rules of right and wrong. Right?
Right.
And here, I think, is the proper answer. Hitler's justification for killing off all the as many Jews as he could lay his hands on was that Jews are subhuman creatures who are trying to undermine and destroy, you know, everything that is right and good for humans.
Right.
Right? That was his justification. The reason why Hitler was wrong is because his justification wasn't accurate.
Right. It was
That's
completely
why
wrong.
He was wrong. Now, if there really were, in our world, subhuman creatures evilly scheming to destroy us, we might, when driven to some point of desperation, we might do to those creatures what Hitler tried to do to the Jews, right, and did to way too many Jews, right? We might try the same actual activity and be right, because that would be self-defense.
Yep.
That's why Hitler was wrong, right? Why Hitler's actions were wrong, because his justifications were not true.
Oh my God,
we're out of time.
Whoa.
God, I really want to get into this one other thing. Let's go over a little. Jacqueline, the other thing is, in this paragraph you bring up selfishness. I just want to, I don't want to get too deeply into this, but I want you to consider that selfishness does not have to be about immediate things. Right?
Right.
There is such a thing as long-term concerns, mm-hmm. right? Long-term planning. And in the interest of long-term planning, if you think you can say things to Christians that will, if you and all other atheists willing to open their mouths do that and have an impact on what Christians believe and say and do, then it is in your best selfish interest to go ahead and open your mouth and state your case, right? Now, I'm not telling you that you need to do any particular thing at any particular time.
No.
You decide what's appropriate for you. Like Jared, who's the teacher at the school, deciding what battles to pick. He is the guy in the position to make that decision for himself. But please don't be short-sighted about your selfishness, okay?
Yeah.
Because there's a whole world and your whole life ahead of you, and it would be much nicer to spend it in a world that was less dominated by lunatics.
There is a value to enlightened self-interest.
Jacqueline also asked about atheist groups near Lubbock. I don't actually know of one, but I was able to find an atheist meetup that happens there, and their next meeting is next Friday. I already sent her the email, but in case for some reason that doesn't get through and she hears our show instead, go to atheists.meetup.com/496. atheists.meetup.com/496 for all the info on that. And if there are any, real atheist groups there other than just a meetup, I'm sure those people will know. Finally, she asks, is it wrong for college campuses to hand out Bibles on campus? Wow, no way to answer that question. We don't know what your college is. Because if it's some private Bible college, then,
yeah.
Wrong. It might be wrong, but only from the perspective of, well, the Bible is stupid. But if it's some, federally funded college-level school, then if the college is doing the handing out of Bibles, then there might be some legal problem. And even on one of those campuses, if it's just some group on campus that's doing it, then
they
are within the rules of the college, then it's okay.
If that's the case, then might I suggest the Porn for Bibles campaign. If they're going to hand out a bunch of Bibles, you can set up a table and offer, trade in your Bible for porn. And Keith Burka, a member of the ACA, has pointed out that you could just hand them the Bible right back since it already includes porn in it.
Yeah, I'm not sure, though, if I've got enough porn to spare. Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. We will be back in 2 weeks. I see we got up to 19 listeners during the course of the show. Awesome.
Woo-hoo.
Good turnout. Everybody hang in there and keep standing up for reason and logic and the truth and stuff. We will leave you with the 10-inch men doing Pretty Vultures. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.